This week, Sean Dyche took his evergreen Clarets down to the Emirates, with the aim being to earn his first ever point against an Arsenal side in the Premier League. This is the Known and Ever podcast.
Hello everyone and welcome to the No Name Ever podcast. George Poole here. I'm just coming off the Emirates after the Clarets have succumbed to a 2-1 defeat to Arsenal after what was a very promising first half. Gotta say, second half was a little disappointing. Arsenal opened the scoring with Lacazette. And then we kept in the game, we kept it at 1-0. And then towards the end of the first half, Barnes has come in. Of course, man of the hour, he's the talk of all the radio stations at the moment. Ashley Barnes slots home to make it 1-0. I've got to say, though, it was all McNeil for Burnley's only goal. He skinned probably one or two players. Shored, he's at home here in the Premier League, and he's put in, I think it might have took a deflection, so McNeil might not have got the assist. But the first goal, no doubt about it, was all about McNeil's contribution. So at half-time, it was really promising. We were thinking, we're going to the second half, and Arsenal here for the taking. But unfortunately, the Clarets have fallen to a 2-1 defeat after Aubameyang, of course it was, has scored against us yet again. Somehow, he's only played four games against us, and yet he's already Arsenal's second top scorer ever against Burnley. Sorry to say Dave's gimmick there with the stat, but he's just too good for us at the moment. I think the biggest shame from the second half wasn't the fact that we've lost, but it's that we didn't really create anything in that second half, unfortunately. I think it's the strike partnership of Barnes and Rodriguez looks worryingly static, I'm not going to lie. And it was very un-Dyche-like when he took Chris Wood off after 60 minutes. I mean, Dyche making a substitution before the 75th minute, unheard of. But we kept going till the end. There was a moment near the end where Barnes was almost through on goal, but Mike Deans pulled him back for a trip on Louise. Typical top six bias, that's all I'm saying. But that's the report from here at the Emirates after the game. Scores on the doors, 2-1 Arsenal. Unlucky, but some promising signs for the season ahead. Up the Clarets.
Mixed feelings from that result today. Obviously, proud of the performance. I thought we played well, and I thought we deserved to come away with a point, which makes it even more disappointing. What's frustrating, though, is that the two goals that we conceded, I thought were poor goals. I thought Peters got turned too easily for Lacazette's goal, and then Gunmanson, obviously, was too slow on the ball. And obviously got caught out for the goal, and you can't do that with someone of Aubameyang's class. But I thought overall it was really pleasing, especially in the first half. I thought we started to knock the ball around really well, created good chances, players were linking together. I thought McNeil again looked bright, especially in the first half. So yeah, again, just disappointed really. Again, further thoughts, if we play like we did today, you know, with having the same bravery to get on the ball, defending as well, looking like a team, being as sharp, I really do think we'll have a good season and, you know, we can aim to come, you know, mid-table. I thought for them, if we're reviewing Arsenal a little bit, the new signing, Dani Ceballos, was outstanding. He'll be a great sign. I thought Pepe looked good when he come off the bench. And even though they did play a lot of nice football, which you'd expect Arsenal to do, you know, they didn't completely rip us open time and time again, even though Pope had to make a few good saves, which is really nice to see him playing well. I thought, going back to the left-back debate, I thought Peters did okay, but I'd still like to see Taylor playing with McNeil. So yeah, so just to summarise all that, proud of the lads, good performance. If we took a draw, I don't think anybody could have really begrudged us. But in the end, just a little bit of sloppiness giving the ball away in our own half cost us.
Well, my post-match analysis of that straight afterwards, after watching it in the White Bear in Barrowford, I'm very proud of the Burnley team. They put a great show on. It was a much better performance than we've seen before at the Emirates. But why, oh why, Ashley Barnes, you're so great. Why did you make that foul at the end of the match? tut. All I can say is VAR, do.
Gosh, and lots to talk about there. Thank you, George. Thank you, Richard. Thank you, Liam, for your immediate post-match reaction there, all from the Emirates. I am, of course, your host, Natalie Bromley, and we are back in the studio to dissect in a little bit more detail just exactly what happened at the Emirates at the weekend. I am joined by one new look panellist and one old panellist joining us for his second season, and he is actually with us in the flesh this week. He's managed to make it, even though we are 20 minutes late recording. It is, of course, Robbie Kopacz. Robbie, eventually, welcome back.
How are you doing? You okay?
Yes, we're good, thank you. And I'm joined this week as well with another new look panellist. We are getting spoilt this season. Listeners who were with us last season will recognise this voice as our teacher from Wigan, Richard, who is joining us all season. Richard, welcome back. I'm really excited you're joining us for a full season.
Hiya, Natalie. How are you this evening?
I'm good, thank you, and it's very good to have you. Now,
thank you very much.
Let's crack on because we have lots to talk about. Now, obviously, as we know from that initial reaction, Burnley away at the weekend to arch nemesis Arsenal. And unfortunately, it is 10 games out of 10 and a complete blank slate for Sean Dyche. He has still not managed to pick up a point against Arsenal. However, Richard, what a good performance. I mean, you were at the ground on Saturday. I actually thought that was one of the strongest performances and one of the most even performances that we've ever given against Arsenal.
Yeah, we played some really good football, especially in the first half. We got the ball on the floor, passed it about, got into some really good attack position, got a good goal where McNeil got past his fullback. And I think not just against Arsenal, I think away from home, that's one of our best performances away at a top six team. I've seen a stat, I may be wrong, Dave listening will know better than me, but seeing Arsenal had 16 shots and we had 18. And that very, very rarely happens that we outscore anybody, never mind. Outshoot anyone, never mind the top six team. So, yeah, really positive performance. And when he was walking away from the ground, you was disappointed that we didn't come away with anything.
Yeah, I was really disappointed. Robbie, I think what I got from the game on Saturday was just that we didn't look like a side who were just almost playing a cup final against Arsenal and they're just a bit, you know, bright-eyed and looking at and being a bit overwhelmed by our surroundings. We looked really comfortable and we actually looked like a strong, established Premier League side, almost in the brackets of your Leicesters, your West Hams and your Watfords, those kind of teams.
Yeah, definitely. I keep like thinking back to like the start of last season where we really lacked an identity, we really lacked that Sean Dyche sort of stamp. And you've watched the Arsenal game. I really thought for the large parts of the first half we were a better side, but maybe not the better side, but we definitely looked like the side more likely to score. It was just a really positive performance. I can't really think of many negatives. My only slight negative is maybe when we took Chris Wood off, I think we lost our effectiveness a little bit. I don't think Jay Rodriguez really got into the game, but other than that, like, it was a really strong performance, so we nearly got something from it.
Yeah, well, let's stick with that, Robbie, because that's actually one of the things I wanted to speak to you about this afternoon. And I genuinely felt that he'd maybe made that substitution a little bit early. Now, I think sometimes we've all been a little bit laughing at Dyche and saying, oh, you know, he makes a change with 5 minutes to go and it's usually to try and see out a game. But he made his substitution really early. He had Jay warming up at about 57 minutes. And at the time, I was a bit surprised to see the change because I thought we were looking really good. Did you see anything, Robbie, that made you question why that change came when it did? Because you're right, I didn't think that Jay was as effective as Wood when he came on.
Yeah, I can't really put my finger on what it was. I wasn't against the substitution as such. I was actually more excited to see what kind of impact Jay would have. I thought he'd have more of an impact. I thought he'd run the channels a little bit more than he did. I thought he'd drop into that number 10 a little bit more. But he just never really seemed to get into the game. And I really think that's where the game really got away from us after that.
I think we will see much more of Jay. I think it's just too early days yet. And like I say, we've got a team of players who are so used to playing with Wood and Barnes up front and they know exactly where everybody's going to be that it's going to take time for Jay to put his own stamp on the game and to find his own partnerships with these players. So I'm not unduly concerned about that at all. Richard, were you surprised to hear, I mean, we knew this way before the game was going to start, but were you surprised that Drinkwater had been left out again? When do you think we're going to see him?
No, I wasn't surprised. I think there was a lot of obviously talk in the media and the press that he was going to get some minutes under his belt in the under-23s. And I seen, obviously, on Twitter today, there's quite a lot of stuff coming out that he's only going to play on the 14th of September against Brighton. But we all know what Dyche is like. He wants his players to get fit, both physically and through match sharpness. And I think the way Cork and Westwood have started, been really impressed with Cork the first two games of the season. He looks like with a good pre-season under his belt. He's come back sharp, he's come back fit, and he's playing well. So I don't think there's a massive, massive rush to get him playing. But at the same time, maybe in a game like that where, you know, second half, you could see we're getting a little bit tired in midfield. It would have been good to have the option of him coming off the bench, but I'm sure we'll see that over the course of the season.
Yeah, I'm sure we will. So, despite an absolutely phenomenal first half, I thought, from the Clarets, from one of the strongest performances I've seen, we did go 1-0 down. Quite a disappointing goal to concede. It all started in a sequence of Ben Mee being judged to have handled the ball, in just outside of the area, and a free kick came from it, which then went out, I think, for a corner, if I remember correctly. And it was ultimately then pushed through the legs of Nick Pope and a very tight angle into the corner. Robbie, just talk us through the goal that we conceded, because I think there was a couple of things in there that I wanted to dissect. I think from your perspective, the defending for the goal, do we have any concerns there?
Yeah, I thought the defending for the first goal was awful. Like, Aubameyang's got a turn against two players. You know, like, are you pretty, he's, sorry, who got the first? It wasn't Aubameyang, it was Lacazette,
wasn't
it? It was
Lacazette, yeah, it was Lacazette.
His first goal.
That's
all right. Yeah, sorry, Lacazette. Yeah, I just thought he turned Eric Peters far too easily for me. And Nick Pope, well, it goes under his legs. It's probably not a lot he can do. But whenever a goalkeeper's beat at his near post, you're often questioned anyway. But I don't agree with the Sean Dyche argument with the handball, because I think we should deal with the corner an awful lot better. And then there's like a second ball which we don't deal with that eventually goes to Lacazette. So we had two or three opportunities to clear the ball and we don't clear it, and we got punished.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'm particularly concerned about the Ben Mee handball either. There's obviously quite a bit of confusion going on at the moment because we are with the new handball rules this season. And I think for me, that was a handball last season. It's a handball this season. It's just a handball. I can have some sympathy with me in that I think in his head, he was genuinely trying to get his arm behind his back. Maybe he was conscious of the new rules about the, whether it's accidental or deliberate, it's irrelevant, and the whole unnatural position of your arm, but at the end of the day, he handled the ball, so I don't have any problems there. Richard, do you share Robbie's view there, or do you think we were just outdone by a class player?
Yeah, I completely agree with Robbie. I thought it was poor defending from Peters against Lacazette. Me was kind of, he turned the other way, me was covering the other direction, and yeah, for someone who's quite a strong player like Peters, he just got turned far too easily. And I think if Lacazette didn't score, it could have been a penalty and as well, because it seemed to pull him down. But I don't think Pope can take much blame from that, because it's from so close and he just fired it at him and he didn't have the reaction time to close his legs. But yeah, I thought Peter should have done better with the goal.
Yeah, I've seen a few people question whether Nick Pope could have done better for that goal. I think that's pretty harsh, to be fair, just judging by the angle he was at and like you say, the reaction time he had. I really don't think there was anything he could have done there. I think he managed to get himself low down as much as he possibly could, so I've got no criticisms from Pope there. Richard, just sticking on Nick Pope for the moment, how do you think he's done since he's come back into the side?
Against Southampton, it was hard to judge, really. He made one good save, and other than that, he didn't really have a lot to do, but he was, you know, pretty tidy. And I thought on Saturday, especially in the second half, when Arsenal were attacking, counter-attacking, you know, he made some wonderful saves and he looked, you know, back to his best. I think that first game against Southampton, coming away with a clean sheet, not loads to do, but just doing his job well, would have given him a lot of confidence. And what he does do for us, he just commands his area so well. You know, and it's almost one of them. if he had a couple of bad games, everyone would have been like, why have we sold Heaton? Why have we sold Heaton? But it's all, I'm not seeing anybody mention once Heaton's name about being back in the team. And that shows how well Paul's done.
Yeah, I agree. I think there was probably a couple of incidents that people are maybe questioning. There was a couple of spells, I think, in the second half, if I remember rightly, where he'd committed himself quite early, and I think he'd chosen to maybe punch the ball out or head it out at one point as well. And I think a couple of nervous fans on Twitter were questioning whether he maybe looked a little bit nervous. I didn't feel that. And Richard, like you say, I think he made some quality saves. I mean, everything now about him just screams class, I think.
Oh yeah, definitely. I think going back to what you said about he come out of his area and headed the ball, I'm not quite sure what people are at if they think that's bad goalkeeping, because that's exactly what you want him to do. He's read the danger and he's cleared the ball before the defenders got there. And what do you want him to do? Pick up the ball and give away a foul. So I think that's something what Hart doesn't give you, because he was just, you know, stuck to his line, and Hart wanted to come for them balls. So no, I've got absolutely no, you know, question in his decision making to come out of his box.
No, I don't either. I do wonder whether people's nervousness around that, just people are still not fully over the beast days when Brian Jensen used to come out and we'd all go, but yeah, no, we're a different kettle of fish now, and we've got Billy Mercer and our goalkeeper's at a top draw. Robbie, what followed from the goal, to me, I think we actually started to play a lot better once we went one goal down. I think that actually was probably what we needed. Suddenly the nerves were away, and the cobwebs had been cleared, and there was no, you know, we weren't defending a 0-0 and a point away from home anymore. We were behind and we had to do something. And I think what followed was some incredible football. And I went in at half time genuinely thinking we'd been much better side after we'd equalised. There was, Arsenal just weren't dealing with the constant crosses into the box, the JBG corners. It was just their defence were having to scramble. And then what that basically ended with was an absolutely fantastic goal by Ashley Barnes. Now, Robbie, he has taken all of the headlines this week for obvious reasons after that performance against Southampton. But I think because of the question about whether it was offside and a VAR review, I think what we lost was some appreciation of what an absolutely fantastic goal Barnes was.
Yeah, it was a good counter-attacking move. You'd often think it would be Arsenal counter-attacking against us, but it was actually the other way around. I think it was just Jack Court just playing a long ball into the channel. Chris Wood did. Actually, sort of like what I was saying before about Joe Rodriguez not running the channels. Chris Wood got himself into the channels, held it up, played in Dwight McNeil, who I thought had a really good first half. Had a bit of a shot, I guess it was a shot on goal, took a deflection. It falls into the path of Ashley Barnes, who couldn't miss. So yeah, it was a nice team goal. Good to see us having a little bit of something, a bit of a different kind of style about it. It's just a shame we didn't really kick on second half from that.
Just out of curiosity, Richard, you were at the ground. I didn't celebrate at first because we knew straight away the commentary was telling us that, well, that's going to get reviewed by VAR. Was he on? Was he off? What was it like being in the ground? Because obviously, usually when you get an equaliser like that and the flag stays down, you're delirious because you've got a point. Did you guys feel apprehension? Was it muted at all, or did you just celebrate and just wait and see?
I think with every goal we've celebrated this season, I've had that initial burst of excitement when you score, and then there's always that little fear in the back of your mind that VAR is going to rule it out. I wouldn't say it went delirious around me, because I was surrounded by tourists, which was a little bit unusual. I had an American couple next to me and a Spanish family behind me, and then me and my dad celebrating in the middle of it. From where it was, he never looked offside, Barnes. I think they had a little check of it. I can't really remember. I think like celebrating any other goal, really, just with that. But you have just got that little niggle in the back of your mind in case it does get ruled out.
Yeah, it's something I'm finding really interesting in these early parts of the season, to see how people are reacting to the threat of VAR. Some people are just celebrating as they always would do, and their natural instinct is just to cheer a goal and worry about it later. I certainly felt that in the first goal against Southampton, but the second goal I was quite muted. So yeah, I'm really interested to see how people are dealing with VAR for that one. Richard, sticking with you, obviously we moved into the second half with Barnes' goal coming pretty much bang on half-time. A bit of a drop in intensity I felt in the second half. Now, a lot of people are maybe putting this down to Arsenal just figuring out what we were doing well and neutralising that. We've already talked about the change maybe coming a little bit too soon. But in the end, it was an uncharacteristic mistake by JBG, which led to Arsenal taking the lead again.
Yeah, there's a couple of points you raised there about our intensity. I wouldn't necessarily agree with how our intensity went down. I think Arsenal definitely stepped it up. I think Dani Ceballos, really got into the game second half. I think he's going to be a great signing. And we really struggled to get the ball off him. And because we were getting deeper and deeper, we didn't quite have that link between the midfield and the defence and then the attack. So we started playing a little bit more long ball and the ball started coming back at us. It was a disappointing one from Gudmundsson. But I suppose if you do want us to try and play out from the back a little bit more and not just hoof it every now and again, those mistakes might happen a little bit. But yeah, it should have been quicker on the ball. And, Ceballos read it well, played it into Aubameyang, and he's just so lethal and deadly from there. You can't give players that time of space. And, he took his goal really well. So I just think for both the goals, Arsenal played some nice football and I thought we defended that well. And you could say two of the goals came from mistakes, which is disappointing, and that leaves a sour taste in the mouth.
Yeah, that's true. I think you made some really good points there, actually, in that you do forget sometimes and you can be a little bit overcritical of your own players and think, why couldn't you keep that same level up in the first half? Why did you have to change? But one of the reasons why these sides are the top six sides are just the class that they have there and their ability to adapt to a game in play and in a half time, and really second by second they can really react and neutralise the things that you're doing well, and ultimately they don't need many opportunities to make it count. And we did two errors, we think, for both goals, and they don't need much more of an invitation to convert those to goals, and that's why they're where they are in the league. And I think Burnley are getting better at that. I think we are. Look at us at Southampton at the weekend. They made a couple of errors and we capitalised on them. So it's just essentially where you sit in the food chain of the Premier League. And I am really, really pleased with where we are at the moment. I think if we keep up this level of intensity, we won't be anywhere near the bottom three. I think we'll be comfortably within that 10th to 13th spot, I think. Robbie, one thing that I would question, I think there were a couple of people maybe guilty of being a bit wasteful at times. We'd managed to get ourselves a couple of surprise opportunities that we didn't quite capitalise on. And none more so than in the dying seconds of the game, where Barnes did that silly foul when I think Lennon was clear, and we probably had dying seconds of the game and an opportunity to try and get an equaliser. I think that was a little disappointing for me. What did you take of that?
Yeah, I was fuming with him. Like, it's just, there's absolutely no point running that kind of risk, because even if referee doesn't spot it, it's going to get pulled back by VAR if anything comes of it anyway. Like, VAR is coming. You can't touch put your arms on another opponent. They were just stupid. And that's coming out saying that Arsenal players fell to the ground easily. I think he used the reference to that, and it's just daft, and it just killed the game for us. I think it was in the, like you said, the last minute, and it just killed all hope for us. And I sort of, when the full time whistle blew, I was actually annoyed, and I should have been a bit more proud.
Oh, that's interesting. That left a bit of a sour taste in your mouth. Robbie, sticking with you, it's interesting that you say there about Dyche's comments about Arsenal players diving. It was something he made quite a big deal of after the game, and he was clearly riled and wanted to talk about this. And this has been on, this is something, Robbie, that you sent to me before we started recording this evening, that it was a point that was picked up by TalkSport this evening, and some real criticism in the press about Dyche's slightly strange rant, purely because I think we know Arsenal players can dive. We know the history with Arsenal that they can cheat, and they will do what they can to score. But I genuinely didn't see any of that on at the weekend.
Oh, I think Arsenal players did it, but I just think we do it just as much. Like, I actually think we're the kings at it, to be honest. I think we're the best at it. That sort of falling to the ground easily. You see Ashley Barnes do it every single week. And it's just a bit like, I wanted Dyche to come out and talk about the performance and, you know, and actually, and it's like he tried to deflect the performance onto like Arsenal's gamesmanship, if you like. It was a bit of a strange tactic from him, to be honest.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm not sure I would have ever categorised us as being kings of going down too easily. I would have thought we were quite the opposite. Richard, did you see anything at the game that you wonder where Dyche has got this from?
No, not really. I didn't think Arsenal were too bad. I thought Torreira come on as a second half substitute, and he was the one player I thought he's going down way too easy, and he started having a bit of a moan. But yeah, overall, I didn't think they were too bad, and I've definitely seen us play against worse teams. I think it was just, you know, mainly just a pure frustration that we played well and we didn't quite, you know, get the result that we deserved on Dyche's end, and we know he gets frustrated by it. I agree in what Robbie says about Barnes. I think he's very, very clever, if we can put it that way, at winning fouls, but I don't think we're the kings at going down. I don't think we dive and throw ourselves on the floor and in terms of looking to win penalties and anything like that. But yeah, it was a bit of a strange one. It deflected away from the performance. I just, you know, saying how proud he was and of the way the players played. But I don't know the question he got asked and what the context was. So, or did he just random rant about it?
Yeah, he had a bit of a random rant about it. I think he was hoping for the question. I did see the interview in full that he did, and it did feel a little bit like he was dying to say it and he was just trying to find the opportunity. Look, I'm not criticising Dyche here, I'll be very clear. Dyche usually gets his post-match interviews spot on. It just seemed to be really strange that was the game that he chose to go on a Arsenal cheat and dive rant when actually that was probably one of the cleanest games that we've ever seen. And I do share both of your comments there in that we should be celebrating what an absolutely fantastic performance that was. Look, we've picked holes in it a little bit tonight because that's the whole point of the podcast. We look at everything and we look at talking points, both positive and negative. But that's the whole point of an analytical review of a game. You look at things that maybe you can do better. But the overriding view for me from this game was it was a fantastic performance, one of the best that we've had away in the Premier League, and we should be celebrating that. I do agree with both of you. So I do wonder whether it's a little bit early in the season for Dyche to start his crusade and maybe he wants to pick his battles wisely. I will end then the review of the game with both of your man of the match. Richard, we'll start with you.
Oh, it's a real difficult one to give man of the match because I don't think anybody had a bad game and I didn't think anybody was particularly outstanding. I'm going to give it to, because he got a little bit of stick last season and it's difficult playing against Arsenal, I'm going to give it to Jack Cork.
Oh, that's a good shout. Robbie, whose was yours?
I'm going to go Tarkowski. I thought he were outstanding. I thought James Tarkowski was outstanding. I thought he got in the way of everything. I thought he handled Aubameyang really well. So, yeah, I'm going to give him a bit of credit. So, yeah, I thought he were outstanding.
Ah, excellent. And my man of the match was also James Tarkowski. I thought he was equally as spectacular as Robbie makes out. So there you go. That is our review of Arsenal away at the weekend. Tweet us your thoughts, send us an email, let us know what you thought, whether you agree with any of our points, or if there's anything that you think we missed. And the second half of this week's show, we are going to look at our talking point of the week. Now, this week has been all about the shirts. And we have two very contrasting points to talk about with that piece of attire that we all love to see when it's released. We love to see our players in it. And the thing that very much carries the badge. This week, the Clarets launched their Evergreen campaign, which is Burnley's third kit, and it is being launched in an eco-friendly way, in the sense that every single shirt sale that is made, every single sale of a shirt of the third kit is going to result in Burnley planting a tree in a woodland area in Burnley. They recognise that they can't save the planet single-handedly, but every little bit counts. Now, it does help, Richard, doesn't it, that that kit is also spectacularly beautiful. But what a great initiative.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea from Burnley. Obviously, we all know now with the environment, there's issues going on there, which people know a lot more about than myself. And to add it off, you know, it is a really nice kit, especially seeing it live on Saturday. You know, it looks really good. And I don't mind the away shirt. It's okay, but I wouldn't get it myself. And I'm not a massive fan of the home shirt. Just think it's a bit dull. And so, yeah, it's a nice, it's a nice third shirt. And I think at the end of the season, when they go on sale for tenner a pop, I think that's the one I'll be buying.
I think I'll be buying it before it goes there. Gosh, Richard, going to the end of the season, I like it. Frugal. I like that attempt. Robbie, certainly in terms of football businesses, environmental campaigns is not something that we usually see from Premier League sides. But I think teams are starting to recognise the voice that they have and the global scale with which their messages reach. And I think to move into things like local communities and charities and now environmental campaigns, do you think this is something we're going to see more of?
Yeah, I hope so. We've done a lot of really good things in the community. Like, you saw the rise of the Burnley FC in the community and the stuff that we've done towards was it the FA Cup game against Lincoln, where we got OAPs to come out with the players and stuff. You know, we've done some really really good campaigns in that sort of getting like the people involved. But in terms of getting like the environmentally friendly stuff is like a big step for us, and I really hope that we actually continue this, because I think it's a really nice thing to do. I think it's something a little bit different because, like you said, we've never really seen it before from anyone else.
Yeah, I certainly would like to see more positive messages being... I just think it's just a really unique way of highlighting something and just the bits that we can all do to help the greater good. So I definitely applaud the club for this initiative, and I'm going to purchase it. I think it's an absolutely beautiful kit as well. However, the issue of shirts has not been positive all across the country this week. For those of you who've not been following this story, Huddersfield Town have got themselves into a spot of bother all about their shirt launch this season, but not a third kit and not an environmental message, but actually their home kit. Just before pre-season finished, they, with all guns blazing, they announced their new home shirt, and it was in association with Paddy Power, who were going to be their main sponsors for the year. And the shirt that was announced was the Huddersfield Town's usual blue and white stripes, but with a huge sash right across the front of the front of the shirt, with huge Paddy Power logos written all the way down it. It was announced in a big fanfare, as you would fully expect from Paddy Power. They like their big jokey attention seeking statements, don't they? That's very much on brand for them. And Huddersfield Town wore it for their last, I believe, pre-season game of the season. The FA immediately set out a press release and said that they were seeking an explanation from Huddersfield Town because the shirt clearly was in violation of their clear advertising and sponsorship rules. We should have all realised that something was a bit of a miss here. It all seemed a little bit suspicious. And indeed it was. Not long after that pre-season friendly had been played, Huddersfield Town and Paddy Power announced that the whole thing had been a big spoof. And actually, it ended up being a very well-executed spoof. Paddy Power are instead launching a campaign that says that, essentially, it's the Save Our Shirt campaign. What their view is that shirt sponsorship, especially in betting companies, has gone far too far, and we have to reclaim our shirts. Now, there's all sorts going on here, but Robbie, I'm going to come to you first because obviously you do have a background in betting companies from a job perspective. And from an industry look, this is something that's gathering a lot of momentum. What is your take on the sheer volume of betting companies in football shirts and the level of sponsorship?
Yeah, I get people's... I know I get why people don't like it, because I always like refer to like alcohol, because I can't think of any alcohol sponsorships on shirts. I think that stopped a few years ago. I remember growing up, there was always a couple of cigarettes and stuff like that, cigarette companies. And I think gambling will probably, that'll happen to gambling eventually, but I don't want to sound biased with my gambling background, but I just think that it does have a bit of an unpopular opinion in terms of its relationship with football. I think his reputation is really unfair. Like gambling is a serious issue, but I believe it's more of a mental health issue rather than the gambling industry. It's more. I don't think the gambling industry is responsible for. Like I always think about the World Cup and like Budweiser sponsoring that, and the Olympics. It's always seems to be something like McDonald's. It's same with like kid campaigns. It's always McDonald's behind that, and I always think it's the same thing. But there's never really that much of an outcry. And that's really my argument against it. But in terms of like the Paddy Power Huddersfield sort of sponsorship, Paddy Power's like engagement and content, it's very community based. Like I think their target audience is like they go to them because they love their content. It's like a very much like a community. And I think Huddersfield Town and are like a community club, a bit like ourselves. And after the spoof like all got announced and all the fake shirts and stuff, they auctioned them out for charity. So it was like a community thing. So it fit both brands and both clubs like really well.
I agree with that, and I actually think it was an incredibly well executed campaign. And like you've just highlighted there, Robbie, they are actually they've made a limited edition of these pre-season friendly shirts, the fake shirts, and they're selling them off to go to charities, which is a fantastic initiative. But Richard, there are a lot of people who are really criticising Huddersfield for this. Not just, well, they're criticising Huddersfield because of their partnership with Paddy Power. And some of the articles that I've read are basically saying that the Huddersfield Town is a community club that's based on trust and integrity and pride and some really solid values. And for them to enter into such a campaign with Paddy Power and such a PR stunt and to take the financial benefit from that doesn't seem to sit well with the club's values. And a lot of Burnley fans are very anti-gambling sponsorships on Burnley shirts. I mean, obviously, we've heard Robbie's view of it, but what do you think the problem is with these gambling companies? Because, Richard, they're the only companies at the moment who are investing in football sponsorship.
That's a lot to take in from your question there, Natalie. I suppose going back to the Huddersfield, that's difficult for me to talk about. I can only talk about how I felt about it personally. I just thought it was a really bit of funny, a bit of advertisement. I remember on Twitter seeing the outcry of when they come out of the shirt, and the outcry that was mainly what I seen wasn't the fact that it was Paddy Power sponsoring them. It was just how bad the actual sponsorship looked on the shirt. And in terms of Burnley having it, I've got to try and be honest. Again, this is my point of view, and I understand why people don't like it, but football is a business now, and and looking at it from the cynical point of view, if, I can't remember who we've got this season, is it Le Bar or whatever it's called, if they offer us, say, 5 million in sponsorship, and then, say a food company like Holland's Pie again only offers us 500,000, then you're going to take the betting company, whether that's right or wrong. That's just the way it is. Don't get me wrong, I like an accumulator at the weekend. And just because Burnley have a sponsorship on a shirt doesn't mean I'm going to spend hundreds of pounds on doing silly bets. So is there any correlation in the last few years to say because football sponsorship shirts, because betting companies sponsor shirts has been a massive rise in gambling addictions? I don't know. There might well have been, but like I said, from my point personally, I just don't like it because I think the sponsorship looks ugly. I just think the sponsorship on the shirt this season just looks, unaesthetically pleasing rather than the moral of it itself. I hope I've kind of answered the question from my point of view there.
No, you have, and you are quite right. I kind of went into a ramble in my own head before I came to you, and you quite rightly said, there's way too much to unpick from that, so apologies for putting you on the spot, Richard. I think a couple of the takeaways from that are really important, and I think one of the points that I pick up on from you, Richard, is that you're saying, obviously, that the certain sponsorships just don't look good on shirts. I think I get that, and I think for me, I've grown up, I can't remember a time where we didn't have shirt sponsors. And I don't know whether or not I necessarily agree with Paddy Power's campaign that the front of the shirt should be sacred. Because I think if I look back to some of the shirts I had when I was 9 years old and first going onto the football with my dad, we always had a sponsorship. We always had a shirt sponsorship. You know, remember that season when we were really struggling financially and we didn't have a shirt sponsor that year? We were an absolute laughing stock of the league. So I don't necessarily have a problem with putting a sponsorship on the front of the shirt. And I'm not 100% sure where Paddy Power are going with that. So I think this argument seems to run into two halves. It's either having a sponsorship on the front of the shirt at all, and this secondary argument that this Paddy Power stunt has raised of being, well, is there too many gambling companies who now sponsor football and we should stop the gambling? Robbie's point was really interesting in that, you know, so many of the big advertisers, your McDonald's, your Coca-Colas, those kind of people, and alcohol companies, they're no, you know, they're also vices that if we go completely nanny state, that we want people to get rid of. So, and we want to protect people from junk food and alcohol abuse, and in this sense, gambling abuse as well. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see how this one rumbles on. One final point to both of you, starting with you, Robbie. The FA have actually charged Huddersfield, which is the latest, which is what prompted me to bring this week as well. They haven't charged them with the stunt itself, but they've charged them with violation of shirt sponsorship rules because they wore the shirt in pre-season. What do we think about that, Robert?
Yeah, I just think that goes towards what I said before, where they auctioned the shirts off at the end for charity. So I think they just took that risk. I think they knew they were going to get charged, but they knew that something good would come out at the end of it. So, like I said, the whole charity thing, it all getting auctioned off, is a really nice thing for it to end, basically.
What about you, Richard? Do you think the FA just being the absolute Grinch that stole Christmas by charging them, or do you think they had no choice?
Well, I think it sums up the FA sometimes, doesn't it? Have they got nothing better to do than worry about charging Huddersfield and that? So, yeah, I just thought. Honestly, I thought that is just typical. You did always find some little rule and regulation that would, you know, that would get them in trouble. But yeah, just to echo Robbie's, you know, thoughts. I think it's a great way to end it that they've auctioned it off to charity. So yeah, I get people will say it's a bad thing, but overall, I just thought it was a little bit of light-hearted fun. There's been a lot of good that's come off it, and if you're getting all upset about that kind of thing, then you're you know, you need to get out a little bit more.
Excellent. What a good way to summarise that. The issue of shirt sponsorship, especially when it comes to betting companies, is one that's going to rumble on quite a little bit. So I do intend to revisit this at some point in the season. I know some of our listeners are campaigning quite actively to be anti-betting companies on shirt sponsorships. And I would love to hear from you at certain points in the season just to see where this one goes, because it's a really contentious topic and it's one that does get people very passionate. So I think we're going to leave it there in terms of the discussion point of the week. But if you are either affected by the shirt sponsorship and gambling companies being on shirts, or you are particularly passionate and an activist against them, then you know how to get in touch with us. Tweet us at nornaynever or send us an email at podcast@nornaynever.net, and we will look to revisit this later on in the season. I'm going to end this week's podcast with a look at the local news from the Lancashire Telegraph. And this is the Burnley edition, and we have two news features this week. The first one, the Foresters Arms in Burnley has been sold. Now, this is a pub which was featured in a football hooligan documentary, which has now been sold for £140,000. The pub actually became notorious in 2006 when previous owners allowed it to be featured on Danny Dyer's Real Football Factories documentary, which aired on the former TV channel Bravo. The owners have now put it up for sale. It went on Rightmove, and the estate agent Savills has now confirmed it's been sold. So an end of an era there for the Forest Arms. And finally, Shweib Khan is sick to death of seeing food and smug travel pictures, he writes in this week's Lancashire Telegraph. He's saying that it would be very good to go to a meal without somebody wanting to take a picture of the food. He realises that we live in an age of self-glorification, but things have got completely out of hand. Eating is no longer something we do alone or with friends and families. We want to tell others what we are having. So if you're going out for dinner, listeners, don't post your picture. Don't take a picture. Enjoy it. Enjoy the company. And don't upset our friend Shweib Khan. That is all we have time for this week, and we will be looking ahead in our special preview show at the weekend to Wolves away on Saturday. So I will be joined by Dave Roberts and our Wolves friends to have a look at that game and to analyse the head-to-head stats. But for the time being, my thanks go as ever to Richard and to Robbie for joining me this week and analysing the result from Arsenal and debating the whole issue of shirt sponsorship. Thanks also go to Matt for producing this week's podcast. Thank you, Matt. But finally, my thanks go to you, the listener, for downloading and listening to this episode. Your support is very much appreciated, and we would not be here without you. I've been Natalie Bromley. This has been the No Nay Never podcast. Until next time.